too windy today.
No, it's Thursday.
So am I. Let's go have a drink. Welcome to Brookings Cafe. There's just no telling who might be here today as we venture in to quench our thirst. We call it our Great American Debate. We come to the discussion in the spirit of fairness and an attempt to offer something conclusive. We don't claim to be experts, but we will strive to come to the table prepared to discuss our topic. We are going to extend invitations to those we think may offer an opposing point of view, and in some cases we may extend a challenge to specific people or groups to defend their point of view. Beware, we fact-check anything that sounds questionable, and we look dimly on mere opinions that aren't based in knowledge. We are trying to reach some sort of a resolution, something that both sides can settle on as an idea worth promoting. In U.S. history, over 300 million people died from smallpox, a disease that is virtually wiped out today because of the smallpox vaccine. But despite the obvious good that has come from vaccines, there is a growing trend of people who refuse vaccinations. Now we have an outbreak of measles, which is another potential killer. Are we as a nation, as a world, being put at risk because of people who choose not to vaccinate? I'm Dan.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Lily.
I'm Rose.
I'm Teresa.
I'm Ben with Curry Community Health.
And we're happy to have Ben here as probably the official word on what vaccinations are about in general and probably more specifically in a lot of cases. So let's go to that question. It's a general question. And Ben, let's start with you. Are we putting the whole human race at risk because of people who don't vaccinate?
Certainly there's risk in the kind of the current trend that's going on. If we look 200 years ago, 100, even 100 years ago, mm-hmm. the main things that we died from were communicable disease,
preventable.
Smallpox. Yeah, preventable disease. So, and life expectancy was much shorter. So we're talking about, 40, 50 years life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And that was largely due to disease that is now preventable through vaccines, better hygiene. So I wouldn't say that, tomorrow we're all going to die from some novel disease or whatnot, but it's certainly a worrying trend that we're seeing more and more folks not get vaccinated. There's a really key piece to having a certain percentage of the population vaccinated, something that we call herd immunity. Mm-hmm. And that is, we like to see people usually in upwards of 90% of the population vaccinated. And that allows for that kind of herd kind of immunity to work so that most people are protected. There are going to be some folks who either can't get vaccinated because of medical risks or concerns.
Right.
And we really want to rally around them and help them and make sure that they're protected. So that's something that we need to keep in mind as we're talking about this issue.
Yeah, and as I understand herd immunity, essentially that means that there's a given percentage of people whether they don't get the vaccination or whether they it doesn't work for them. There are those people that make up a small percentage mm-hmm. of the general population. If the general population has been vaccinated against a specific whatever, then what that means is that you essentially are spreading apart those few who are not vaccinated so that you may have one in this town and one in this town and another in that town. The chances of all of those people rubbing against people, you're playing a numbers game.
It is. It is a numbers game. And, like we're seeing in Clark County right now in Washington, mm-hmm. In some of those communities, especially in the schools, some of the vaccination rates were as low as 20 to 30%.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So it's not necessarily that it's going to completely stop somebody from getting measles or whatever disease we're talking about if we have that herd immunity. But if somebody comes in who is ill, the likelihood of it becoming a bigger problem is mm-hmm. minimized. So yeah. It's all about kind of minimizing risk and the potential for something much larger to start.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben and Dan, exactly with the herd immunity. And I'm Jesse. I'm a veterinarian at Town and Country Animal Clinic here in Brookings. It's huge with the animal interface as well. And focusing on children specifically, rabies, for example, I think in this country we're extremely lucky, and we have great vaccine protocols and control of a lot of diseases that we take for granted. And so rabies being one of them, especially out here out west, rabies is quite uncommon. The only form we really worry about is bat rabies, which is still, I believe, a very small percentage of the bat population here. So a client of mine just got back from, I believe, somewhere in Africa, but she's a human doctor and was traveling there to vaccinate the dogs and the children for rabies. She was treating a little girl with a wound from a dog bite. And another little girl earlier that month had succumbed to rabies from a similar dog bite in a similar area. Mm-hmm. And we do have those cases here, but they're very rare compared to there. And that's because we have strict vaccine protocols, as a basic example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot easier to make the requirements that your pet be vaccinated than it is to make the requirement that human beings be vaccinated. I think that's kind of interesting.
Sure.
One of the things that I was kind of surprised to discover about vaccinations in general when I was researching about smallpox and other diseases. You were mentioning all of these diseases that people died from. In Europe, there was the plague or a series of plagues, but especially the one big bubonic plague. There are still tremendous right now, Ebola is one of the ones in Africa. There are just all of these diseases, and they're worldwide. This isn't just necessarily just a problem for Brookings or a problem for the United States. It's a worldwide problem. And I read online today or yesterday that this anti-vaccination phenomenon is not just America.
That's right.
It's also in Europe. Yeah.
Yes.
Lily, you're from somewhere off of that part of the world, right?
Right. Yes, I'm Lily, and I've been working as a foreign correspondent in Eastern Europe, predominantly in Serbia and Ukraine, and those are the two countries with the highest rates of measles, actually, right now. Mm-hmm. And it comes from this kind of, what I think is, it has the same kind of origin as what you see in the United States, this kind of anti-establishment, kind of populist disinformation that's often kind of spread via social media. Like, I don't think that even 15 years ago, 20 years ago, we would have seen this kind of level of like a global phenomenon. Like, it's being spread easily. This kind of a distrust of vaccines, but also of just elites in general, the old establishment, via social media.
Mm-hmm. And Lily, I think, yeah, I agree, and it's well said. I think we're just lucky because we haven't had to see, we didn't see people in the iron lung, for example, or we didn't see that. So then we're privileged to say, okay, well, we haven't seen how bad it could get. So now we can look at all this other information and we're making our decisions on the information you just described. Whereas before, when people were dying quickly, then you don't think about that at all. You just get the thing that's going to save you. And but in a lot of countries, there's still, again, they're dying from these very preventable diseases, and we have to remember that when we're making the decisions. Yeah.
And Lily, do you think that social media, and you can go online, because I did for researching to come on this show today.
Right.
You can go online and find some pretty convincible arguments for any stance you want to take on anything, but definitely vaccines. I was looking for that. And so basically conspiracy theories and misinformation, whether it be political or about your child's health, everybody can just go off on their own little tangent. And this is going to, in my mind, when I was researching for today, I think this is just going to get worse. I don't think the outbreak in Washington is going to convince people in this country to get vaccinated. I think it's going to make people go to their polar opposites. And you have seen this in Europe. It sounds like, I didn't realize that it was even more so there, but I would love to hear, because I'm sorry, I'm not a big social media fan.
Good.
And I think that there have all, 20 years ago, I was a young mother, definitely had other young mothers that had concerns about, they want to be all natural, and that's great. But I think it's way worse, and it can spread, instead of the virus spreading, the misinformation is going to spread. So I'm going to turn it back to you on that.
It's a really good question, because when we talk about in something going viral on social media, it literally goes viral. That's the nature of social media. It's social networks. It was built so that every person has their social network. When some information, maybe it's a lie, enters that one person's social network, it's going to go viral if it has any kind of traction, gains traction. And then people all over the world can see that. In the past, there were gatekeepers. You had to have a certain, say, level of expertise to be a journalist, to write for the Washington Post or whatever, or to write for whatever publication. Nowadays, anyone can start open a blog, right? And like write about how if you eat like 20 bananas a day, that's going to cure your cancer or whatever. So there were some positive things about this idea that like democratizing information, like in the beginning, we all thought this was going to be a very positive thing, that the internet was inherently democratic, that anybody could kind of share their experience. But there's kind of a as I think we've seen politically, like there are some kind of negative things that go along with that, which is that people can spread information that has nothing to do with reality, especially when it comes to science. I mean, I would say with something like journalism, it is very subjective, like to an extent. Like, so when Trump goes on Twitter and says the lion news media, like there is like maybe a kernel of truth. Like you could maybe say that in certain instances, journalism isn't always honest. But when it comes to science, when it comes to things that are like have to be like verified like multiple times, like that's when it gets kind of like dicey. But I think that this kind of anti-establishment populist revolt that's kind of led us to Trump and Brexit. I think that anti-establishment politics are not inherently bad. Like, I think it's a kind of a good reaction it's good to question the establishment. But when it comes to something like science, I think people kind of take it a bit they're abandoning gatekeepers and the old experts that kind of kept us safe for a long time.
Well, Lily, I want to ask your mom, Rose, because she and I are similar age. I didn't even question vaccinating my son. Did you?
I did not. I did not question vaccinating either of my children. And in fact, I was proud to march them in and get their little vaccination cards checked off and keep a record. It was my pride in being a good parent in keeping them healthy. But I will say today in this environment, and I know that part of the situation that young parents are struggling with is that the number of vaccinations, and I don't know to what extent, have increased, double-fold since 30 years ago. And, I mean, when I would bring my babies home from getting their shots, they'd run a fever for 2 days. It was kind of a traumatic thing, and that was kind of heartbreaking. But the possibility of having a child become autistic within weeks or months of a vaccination would give me pause in this day and age. However, because I'm a rationalist and I err on the side of science 100% of the time, I would opt to have a very honest communication with a pediatrician that I respected highly and just go with what he says.
So we had the word autism. Ben, do you want to take this one? You're the expert and go with this. I have lots of, I can comment on it, but I'm going to defer to the expert on this.
So I like to kind of rephrase that phrase, and I say vaccines cause adults. That's
really
so the original study, and if you've read the original study, if you've ever gotten your hands on this study done by Andrew Wakefield, it was only kind of like this side comment. It wasn't really like the main focus of his study. And so there's a lot of controversy around it. He's been stripped of all of his licenses for whatever he has done. And so it's been debunked and discredited and all of those things. There is a correlation between when people get their vaccine, specifically the MMR vaccine, and when autism is diagnosed. So there's some, it's more a timing issue more than anything. So it's unfortunate timing, right? But that's like saying that when the ice cream truck comes, that causes more fish to pop up in the sea. I mean, they could be, they're totally unrelated, but they happen at the same time, you know? Yeah. So I don't, you know, I'm just making something weird up right now. But so there's this idea that when you get your vaccine, that causes that autism, but it's really not, there's no causal link there. But it is, like you said, it can be traumatic when, you know, you take your child in and it hurts, they cry. There's pain involved with that. Sometimes they do run a fever. But when you get a vaccination, it's going to cause an immune response. That's what its job is to do. It's to cause an immune response in your body so that when you do come in contact with that disease, hopefully you don't, but if you do later in your life,
it hurt,
you'll be ready,
Charlie,
for it.
It really hurt.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But you'll be, your body and your immune system will be ready for that challenge when you do encounter that disease. That's so, there is an element of kind of pain.
I want to remind everybody, you're listening to Discussion at Brookings Cafe on KCIW. Pi White is the one who is turning the magic dials over there and making us sound even better than we really are. And so continuing on, Jesse, you had a comment.
Yeah, I was just going to comment on the discussion Ben and Rose were having. And Ben, you had said too, you talked about autism, and I think addressed it appropriately for sure. And that's, we see that all the time in animal medicine as well. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard too, because then they're not telling you entirely how they feel, and you're kind of guessing at what's coincidental. So we see that with our vaccines, you know, did this cause that or not?
Right.
Have not had anything though pop up that has been linked with it, other than just the acute reaction right after the vaccine, right? That if they can't quite handle the inflammatory response. But to your point of, if I'm going to keep my train of thought here, so the autism, we were just talking about the amount of vaccines. Thank you.
Yeah.
There's a couple of new mothers who are veterinarians that work with me too, and they realize that even though I'm sure, and I've not looked at the stats, that there are more than there were, or maybe, I don't know, I think there's always been quite a few, but gladly, they said that the vaccines that their children are getting are still quite less than the number of our dogs are getting over their lifetime. And the amount that our dogs are getting over their lifetime, certainly it's over a lifetime, because we don't vaccinate children and people quite as long for sure, but it's still quite a safe amount. So we have not been having any adverse effects for the amount we've given dogs, and nothing that comes up when they're 10 and getting their next round. So that's at least good news there.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was mentioned quite a bit on Curry News and Views Facebook, which I only look at briefly, but I did on this vaccine issue, was encephalitis, which is actually, you're more likely to get it from the measles itself than from the vaccine, but you can get it from any virus or reaction to. So, Ben, can you just kind of, since that was a big thread, autism and encephalitis were big threads on why not to vaccinate.
Mm-hmm.
Can you address the encephalitis?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a chance for adverse reaction. In public health, in medicine, we always report all of those 100% of the time. If there's ever an adverse reaction, we report those, and they're tracked. They're tracked at the state level. They're tracked at the federal level. They're tracked at the world level, all of those adverse reactions. So those reactions are very, 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 very low. It does happen. So I'm never going to deny that. But as you said, the chance of catching measles and then developing encephalitis is much greater than from potentially the vaccine.
And I would compare this to wearing a seatbelt. There are very, very rare occasions where the seatbelt is going to trap you in the car in an accident and cause you more harm than it protects you from. And I think that all of us can kind of envision those scenarios. But the stats are that 99.99, whatever, they're very high. That seatbelt is going to save you from serious injury or death. That vaccine is going to save you from serious injury or death way more than the chance that that vaccine is going to hurt you. So when I was researching this, I really felt like the seatbelt analogy, which when seatbelts first were starting to be required, Jesse, go for it, Jesse. I mean, I think it's a perfect analogy for people to really...
I love this. I didn't think you guys would get me so excited about this topic. I'm exhausted from surgery today, and I'm like, let's go. This is awesome. I think it's a good analogy for... So there's our core vaccines, right? There's ones that we... as far as dogs go, there is one, the rabies, that is required by law, and you can't deny it, but then your pet has to be quarantined if it bites someone, so... There, I don't know, for people, I guess there's none required, but there's our core. You really should get these. These are a big risk. This is a big deal. You can die from this. And so that's the seatbelt, right? So perfect example. And so then coming back around to, I think it was talked about Lily a little bit earlier, that then there's, of course, the one of you guys said the safe use of it, the judicious use maybe would be a good word, judicious, there, that word. So then there's those vaccines that are not core. And just like with our antibiotic use, I think that we all want to use them responsibly and weigh the risk and benefit. So there's our seatbelt vaccines, completely agree. And then there's our vaccines that I think most of them at the point that they're released to the public will not do harm, but is it worth, you know, that many vaccines? What's the reaction risk? And then it comes to your gatekeeper comment of, the gatekeepers are now the individual. It used to be where, right, there was an expert. Now it's on the individual. You are the gatekeeper because you need to either do your research on your experts and then talk between experts, or trust that the experts assigned to your community are going to take care of you. So you're responsible for your own well-rounded research and then trusting the use. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe pulling on the seatbelt example as well. Often I hear, and I think you've probably all heard this, you know, back before seatbelts were developed, oh, we didn't have seatbelts and we survived. And
no, we didn't.
Well, well, the problem with that argument is the people who didn't survive can't speak up. Right. I'm sorry to be morbid about that, but that... You know,
exactly true.
We say, oh, you know, it's like your teacher, or if your parents are like, is everybody here? Well, it's like, well, the people who aren't there can't speak for themselves. Yeah. So we often use that argument that, oh, we made it, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah,
they don't have a voice.
And speaking of the seatbelt analogy, a couple of things that occurred to me was, one, you're going to go, you're not going to go take your child to be vaccinated because you think there's a big risk in it. However, you pop the kid in the car and you drive him to a swim meet where the risk in the swimming pool of them drowning is greater, right. And the car, the ride in the car is, that risk is so great. And I remember I went in for a surgery and so they brought me this long form and down at the bottom it said, might result in death. So I signed it anyway. Yeah. But I wonder how I would have reacted if the anesthesiologist would have said, well, Dan, we're putting the IV in now and you're going to go to sleep and, you know, you might not ever wake up again. So, hey, we're going to sing a little song for you and celebrate your life right here. I would probably think differently about it.
Sure.
And so I think that, and especially with the social media, you have a lot of amplification of what the risk is, and you don't think about what the alternative is. Yeah.
I wanted to say something about the social media and also the whole proliferation of a lot of these, what I consider to be conspiracy theories, the conspiracy theory that, you know, big pharma and big government is just, they don't really care about your health. They're just making a profit and they want to control you. It seems that there's so much divisiveness in the world today. It's not just America, where we've never been more divided along partisan lines. But I remember something my dad used to say, and that was, Rosie, there's nothing that brings people together like a common enemy. You know, and it's like, I think people are just hungry. If there seems to be it may not be correct, but our autism diagnosis is rising. And so people are desperate to find the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. And that might be playing into why vaccination is one of the boogeymen. But I had a question for Ben. The mercury, the question of the mercury content in the vaccination formula, why? I've read that no correlation has been found to date, but everything I remember being a pregnant woman is that you don't eat canned tuna because of the mercury content and everything.
Sure.
So why is it okay that there's some formulation of mercury in the vaccines?
So I think a really important phrase that I always go back to with this one, one of the early kind of fathers or grandfathers of modern public health, he said, dose makes the poison. So it's all about the levels and the dose. So yes, there's mercury in there. And yes, mercury is known to be a dangerous for babies and for children and for pregnant women. But in the amounts that it's in there, it's not posing any kind of risk. It's in there as a preservative to make sure that everything stays
stable
and that nothing is growing that shouldn't, you know, that should be growing. And, you know, it's making sure that it's viable when you get that vaccine. So,
and I want to expand on the autism thing, because I think that people want to go back to what's natural. Mm-hmm. And I read an article about how they feel like Roundup is causing autism and
cancer.
That's connected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so everyone's kind of skeptical and wants to go back to as natural as possible. But with autism, because Ben mentioned this, I had several very close friends whose children were definitely on the spectrum. And in watching those children and watching them develop, and one of them very close, extremely close family member, that child, up to the age of about 15 months, did not appear autistic, would eat almost anything, was verbal, and at 15 months, it went from, I have a picture of Matthew eating on, he was like 9 months old, eating on a drumstick with barbecue sauce, almost like eating too many different things for that age group. And at 15 months, I gave him Jell-O. What kid does not like Jell-O? The minute it touched his tongue, it was projectile, rocket speed across the room. And they lived in Phoenix. I lived in Tulsa, and I would go out there about every 3 weeks for a long weekend. And I was like, what is going on?
Was he diagnosed with autism?
Yeah. He was very autistic. And it happened at about 15 months where we noticed it. But when we looked back, the vaccines did not cause it. They very much correlate time-wise. And then this doctor in England did this big study and everybody took it. But when we look back, even at 12 months old, that baby never cried in the morning for mom or dad to come get him out of his crib. If he woke up, he would just lay in his crib and he would tap his foot on the bed repetitively and soothe himself. That's not normal. You think that's a good baby? That's not a normal baby. Mm-hmm. And so if parents are realistic, and the problem is that pediatricians don't even recognize autism in their baby. I think they might be getting better, but it's such a complex thing.
It is.
And when I saw Matthew go through that and saw him at that age and what a drastic change, and I know it wasn't associated with vaccines. It wasn't.
But it's hard.
I can see where you could come to that conclusion.
You want to grasp to something. It's easier to try to find the reason.
You're always looking for the boogeyman, as was just said. I'd like to remind everybody, this is KCIW. You are listening to Discussion at Brookings Cafe.
I think we would be remiss in not bringing up the celebrity factor in our crazy society.
Mm.
And let's give a shout out to Jenny McCarthy for helping to kick off this, I'm being sarcastic, this anti-vaccination trend, you know, with all heartfelt sympathy for the fact that her child developed autism. But why is it that so many of us follow a celebrity's, you know, thinking on a topic as complex and scientific as this, rather than listening to our doctors?
We tend to forget that this celebrity, 3 weeks ago, before he was discovered, was waiting tables at a restaurant in Los Angeles.
I think there's an empathy aspect there. Yeah. I think that actors and people who are famous are very good at pulling on that empathy, and they there you can relate with them. Yeah. Science is not very empathetic.
Right. Exactly. Right. And that's what we love about science.
And scientists are usually not the most sensitive, empathetic type
but
folks.
But it should work the opposite. But okay, I get that. Yeah, right. I want facts. I don't want empathy. But it's a very good point.
I think that's why people tend to gravitate to listen to people like that.
And I would just say that the celebrity component is not just American. And in Serbia, I know sort of the country in Europe with the highest rates of measles and, right now, the person leading this kind of campaign against vaccinations is one of the most famous folk singers in the country. And she's like this she's a kind of babe. And she has no medical expertise whatsoever.
Yeah.
So that's really common. Mm. And also, I know that Andrew Wakefield's current girlfriend is Elle McPherson, the most famous swimsuit model ever. So there's kind of an element of celebrity.
Yeah.
With even like the author of this Lancet article.
Yeah.
Linking it's even used in advertising. I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. Nonetheless, I'm going to tell you that this product is the one you should buy.
Yeah. Right.
Right. That's all said, both of you. Yeah, and it's you know what is so it comes down to unfortunately their voices are being amplified rather than again trusting in the experts and amplifying those voices and science surely and I think Ben, you said it. I mean, science isn't as relatable. Inherently, though, that's the process. Scientific method, process is supposed to be that way.
Exactly.
And so then it comes down to, Teresa, what you're saying. So then in all of this, what is natural? Like a lot of these people are wanting to go natural or we already just discussed trying to find a link and blame it. But what is natural in science? There's a bunch of different chemicals. I mean, even water at the wrong dose, when you're talking about dose, will be toxic. It can kill you. Mm-hmm. And so in everything, there's natural quote-unquote chemicals, and then there's the chemicals we make that in a lot of cases are safer than those we're exposed to. Back in the day before we dealt with pollution, the amount of valleys that people were in, you know, even if it wasn't man-made stuff going on, but just, you know, not volcano valleys, but valleys where the amount of minerals they hadn't studied yet and they were getting exposed to what was naturally there and the illnesses that they caused as well.
Well, naturally is how we lived 100 years ago.
200 before we years paid attention
ago,
to it. Yeah.
Diseases were wiping people out like crazy and the life expectancy was 40, 50 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are living longer and more healthy now than ever before in history. And we just don't have these huge pandemics wiping out millions of people at a time thanks to modern medicine. And, there's a risk. But
vaccines are their own worst enemy when you really think about it. They have been so successful that they've eradicated diseases that we don't have that visceral reaction to. We don't have the boogeyman anymore of measles pounding down your door that's coming for your kids. You know.
And it was like Rose said about the common enemy, or did you say that? The common enemy was smallpox 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And when the vaccine came along, it was like all of a sudden everybody said, yay, we whipped this horrible enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But now you talk about a smallpox vaccination and people look at you like, what's that?
Well, it was smallpox and people are like, well, what's smallpox? I've never seen that.
I mean, I think it's still alive.
It is.
A little bit here and there.
It is.
Yeah.
And I appreciate it. How you put that, and I want to be the one to reach out and say, so there's those people listening that said, yes, but my son or daughter, my dog or cat had that once rare thing, and they're gone now. And I want to reach out to them and say, you know, because your trust in why this was good to do and because you were willing to do that, and I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry in that that does. Mm-hmm. And because of your original trust in it and because we do this, those, in my case, those puppies over there that are too young, or that child over there that's going through chemo, or that child over there that has an immune compromised disease and cannot get vaccinated, those children are going to live because the rest of them around them are vaccinated, and so the risk of them getting sick is so low. So I'm so sorry that you experienced something so terrible, but you did it knowing that you were helping those others that could not receive this. You're helping them live. And the number of people that you have helped live by believing in this and supporting this, I mean, it's just, you can't even count it. The number of people you've helped, and never forget that.
This brings to mind the idea of anecdotal versus data, where, you know, you read, some story, and somebody says, well, you know, I gave my husband this coconut whatever, and his cancer was gone in 3 weeks. Well, that's one instance, and can you attribute it to the coconut whatever? Maybe, maybe not. But that versus a study of, say, 100,000 people where you can actually look and say, well, out of all of these, and all of these guys took the coconut whatever, but only one of them, and that's anecdotal, one instance versus 100,000 or 200. Some of these studies are huge.
Well, like, I would compare, you were, I think, Dan, you were talking about signing for a surgery, and they said you could die. These parents that don't want to vaccinate their child, the chances of that vaccine hurting the child are probably less, I would have to look up the actual stats, than somebody going in for routine, what's a good routine surgery that's pretty benign?
Wisdom teeth.
But you could, somebody, I mean, there are occasionally people who die from the anesthesia of going over to have their wisdom teeth out. But who do you know that has refused to have their wisdom teeth out because of that little small possibility? So moms and dads out there, grandparents, caregivers, when you please think about the science, these are your children, and you are not helping them.
I just want to say something about appealing to science. I think a lot of people who are distrustful of vaccines are, at least in the part of the world I was in, Eastern Europe, they reject the idea of science taking over religion and also taking over like organic ways of life, like living in a kind of healthy, natural way, as we said. And so it's not so much even just about autism. Autism is a very minor problem in the countries I've been living in, and it hasn't really become quite the issue that it is in the United States. But there is just this kind of visceral kind of rejection of anything that science is going to overtake the traditions that have kept people in their minds kind of say safe or in some way healthy for, like, you know, hundreds of years. And it is what people will say.
That's so interesting. Yeah. We're such a new country, you forget.
Yeah, you're right.
Amazingly, we accept and we reject science.
Yeah.
We hop in the car, we turn on the key, and science is what propels us down the road to the next town, probably safely.
Yes. Yeah.
And yet we hear a story on the radio about this or that, and it just doesn't ring quite right because it doesn't fit intuitive reasoning or whatever. And so then we say, no, I don't believe that.
Yeah.
And that's gone away. But, you know, science has done a lot of things for us. I mean, we're all sitting in here. The life expectancy is up. We're all sitting in here enjoying warmer weather than it is outside. We all got here with automobiles. Somebody probably walked. Anyway, my point is that, you know, we have this tendency to kind of reject science here and there, when in reality, we live with it and we trust it with our lives.
I just wanted to throw in one other factor that I thought was really, at one point I thought was really the driving force behind this anti-vaccination fever that seems to have taken over the country. One of the first instances I read about an outbreak in a strong anti-vaccination community was Marin County, California, one of the richest counties in the country. And it seems almost to me like people who, where the wolf's never at the door, you don't really have any financial problems, you don't really have any health problems, maybe nobody in your current family has had ancestors who died from these diseases, you have the luxury to say, well, you know, maybe I don't need this because maybe they just don't have any too many things to worry about, you know? I don't really know what that psychology is, but I did a little bit of reading, and it turns out that from what I've just anecdotal, you know, on the internet, is that this anti-vaccination fervor, as Lily was pointing out, not only is it in Europe, but it crosses political bounds, socioeconomic bounds, every kind of bound, every kind of group think you can bring up. So I think it's a lot of the signs of the times. Where it's been said that we're living in a post-truth era, and where people are just distrustful of everything and everybody, more so, you know, lately, and for good reason. But
I would wager to say that the social media phenomenon is partly as a result of that. If you see it in print, it must be true. Mm-hmm. If you see it on a computer screen, it must be true. Mm-hmm. And nobody really stops to think about who wrote it or what the source is, because it agrees with their opinion.
They must not have been educated, because that's one of the first rules of, don't believe everything you read. And I mean, unless it's...
I'm not sure about that. I mean, propaganda is very sophisticated nowadays.
Yeah.
And anyone who manages to kind of build a big enough platform... and speak with some authority, like, can persuade a lot of people of something. And Jenny McCarthy is a good example of that. Or, like,
Alex Jones.
and actually, Alex Jones is a great person to bring up, because you see now that there's some efforts by the establishment. I'm using quotation marks in person. I
mean, like,
seeing that people in, listening. But, there is some pushback from, say, the gatekeepers. So Alex Jones has been banned from most social media platforms. Mm-hmm. Now you have what is considered, like, Russian propaganda, whether you believe that or not, it being kind of eliminated from Facebook and Twitter. And the same thing goes with disinformation about vaccinations. So you, like, just I saw today Pinterest, one of the social media, I don't use it, but social media platforms has really cracked down on vaccination information. That was on the front page of the newspaper today. Mm-hmm. I think that Twitter is also on top of that, and there even have been some people, I think Radio Free Europe, which is a State Department-funded publication, has claimed that Russian bots or Russian accounts are spreading disinformation about vaccinations. I don't know if that's true. There's a tremendous amount of evidence that's true, but for sure, like, it's interesting to see how social media companies and the government are kind of pushing back against some of the disinformation.
I'm going to do a little true confessions, because I am totally pro vaccines. I believe science. I try to research science, but I didn't get a flu shot this year. I didn't get a flu shot last year. I am over 50 years old, and I mean, everyone should get a flu shot, but certainly children, anyone with immune... Well, you could give the actual... Ben, I'm playing Ben's role. Ben could say, I mean, I am in the age group where I definitely... And I'm living with someone who's retired and definitely elderly. I should, but he didn't even get his flu shot till like 2 weeks ago.
You old man.
And why do I not get a flu shot? I've only gotten one a couple times in my life when I was required to with work, because I like to go natural and not put things in my body. And I've never had a bad reaction from flu, but when I look at the statistics, and honestly, all of this and coming on this show and talking about this, I think I am going to get a flu shot. Maybe not this year, because it's almost over, which is really, I should.
Still not too
I know,
late.
I know, I know. And Lily's giving me the evil eye.
Ben, you got to drive this home, man. Tell her why to get
you
one,
know,
Ben.
We all need to really look at ourselves and how we justify things. And I'm going to give another example that Rose and I have shared. I had borderline high blood pressure. It was... And I was a very natural person. I did not have my son on any antibiotics from the time he was about one and a half until he was 15. Because we just, you know, a lot of luck. And I was real natural. And my doctor was. It was great. So I had borderline high blood pressure, but it wasn't over the line. And my doctor, every time I went in, he'd be like, you know, blood pressure medicine would take, and I'm like, I like to do it natural, because I know. And I took a physiology college course. Long story on that, I was in my late 30s, early 40s, and I learned what even moderate high blood pressure does to your organs and your blood vessels. And I went running Literally, I didn't wait for my next appointment. I called my doctor, I got in, and I said, I want my blood pressure pills and I want them now. And I told him, and I said, why did you not explain to me how even moderate blood pressure puts stress on every organ and blood vessel in your body and wears your body out quicker? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, most people wouldn't even listen if I tried. I don't have time to give you a 3-hour college course. Mm-hmm. And it just blew my mind that this information was out there. But I kept going to the doctor and saying, I want to be natural and blah, blah, blah. And when I learned the real science and the real facts, I took my lisinopril of 10 milligrams. That was over 10 years ago. I've never needed more. And my blood pressure is so controlled. My doctors are, it's like, I wish mine was that good when they see it. You know, it's a little pill. Are there people that have side effects from lisinopril? Yes. Very rare. Very rare. It's the same analogy as the vaccines. But how many people does lisinopril keep alive, as you were discussing earlier? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Into their 90s, healthy alive. So we need to go back to science, right, Ben?
Yeah. Well, it's modern medicine extended my life to here, wherever I am now. Otherwise, I'd have been dead probably at 56 because I had a heart attack. Mm. And modern medicine did some corrective stuff in there and put me on lisinopril, among other things. I want to remind everybody, this is a discussion at Brookings Cafe, where the food we serve here is so tasty you'll never remember it. And this is KCIW. I'd like to turn this just a little bit. I'd like to ask Ben the question, what are the common vaccinations? Does anybody get vaccinated for smallpox anymore?
Not really. It's been considered eradicated, mm-hmm. so it's not something that we routinely do. So there are risks with that. When we have declared something eradicated, generally we stop vaccinating for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we see a case pop up, it can be alarming because we have a generation or two who have not been exposed to it and have no immunity to it.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates has said that one of his greatest predictions for, you know, fears for the future would be that a novel illness or an illness that we've considered eradicated comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a generation or two who have not had exposure to it, and it can wipe out a big portion of our population.
Mm-hmm.
So generally what we're immunizing for are things, measles, mumps, rubella, varicella, which is shingles, or the mm-hmm. chicken pox, you know, those types mm-hmm. of things. And some people would say, oh, well, those aren't really bad diseases, you know, they're not gonna hurt
people.
Oh,
the shingles is.
If anyone has experienced shingles, it's not
is that communicable?
No.
Shingles, no, not necessarily, but the chicken pox,
yeah,
yes. And it's
I had a little itty bitty patch once.
Mm. Yeah, it's very painful.
Yes, it was, and I immediately got the vaccine.
I rushed to get it, yeah.
But things like tetanus, diphtheria, rabies, these are things that are significantly, they have high mortality rates.
Right.
Rabies, we consider, almost 100% mortality rate if you develop the disease.
Well, the good news is we don't have rabid people running around biting each
exactly,
other.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, it's,
we do have bat encounters. We do have them here in this county where people encounter bats in our
pit. Possums.
Yeah, they require veterinarians to... Some require some strong language veterinarians to be vaccinated, so I got I got that in vet school, and because I get bit, I swore I never would, but I do.
Yeah, it happens.
What about polio?
Yes, vaccinate for that, and that one is globally, we're still trying to vaccinate and get that vaccine out there because it is still a problem in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Now, polio is carried also by some animals, right?
Yeah, and this is one where some people will say, oh, well, it's not that bad, but it caused a lot of deaths, mm-hmm. historically speaking, and a lot of disfigurement.
I had two or three friends when I was growing up in mm-hmm. school, had been in the 50s.
Yep.
The 50s. And they had polio.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, they had a leg that was shorter. They had any of a number of deformities like you were talking about. Yeah. And the awareness for polio was very high then.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of ads on television about the news of the vaccines being developed. And I remember when it first came out and it was a little cube of sugar. And yeah. I said, oh, really? Yeah. I'm not going to get stuck with a needle.
I remember taking my sugar cube from school.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to look very far to look about, you know, where we came from in these developing nations. Look at Madagascar right now. Mm-hmm. They have 500,000 cases of measles right now.
Yeah, and they've had 900 deaths.
Yeah, yeah, they've had quite
rubella?
A few deaths. No, measles.
Okay.
Yeah, measles. Yeah. So, and you mentioned, 15,000 cases, yeah, I think,
exactly.
in Ukraine.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are countries where maybe they don't have a history of vaccinating or standardization per se. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we were. And, you know, we've kind of come where we're standardized on a lot of our vaccines now. And so we don't see that level of illness or death or disfigurement, but we're not far behind if we continue in this trend. Mm,
right. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what Curry Community Health can do as far as offering vaccinations for who? Children, adults?
We have vaccines for everybody.
For everybody? And what is this going to cost me?
We bill insurance. And despite,
what if I don't
you know, there
have
was
insurance?
Some comment about Big Pharma before. We actually lose money on providing vaccinations. Yes, there is a fee, but it's so we can continue to offer the services. We have to pay for nursing staff. We have to pay for medical staff to provide those vaccines. So it's a nominal fee, and it's to cover our costs. We're not
okay. So that's
money.
If I don't have insurance, it's going to be a nominal fee.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But if you have insurance, it's covered by your insurance. You know, varying insurance. I can't speak for all of the various insurances.
Medicare.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
And talk about adults needing to get the MMR.
Yeah.
Booster, because I think there's a lot of adults out there that are not covered.
What booster?
Right now.
Really?
Well, I know a little bit. I'm going to let the expert go with the...
So it's important for pregnant women after they give birth to get a booster of MMR. And what that does is it helps pass immunity onto their child who can't be vaccinated until they're much older. Mm. You know, 12 months is when I think they get their first MMR vaccine. So you've got an infant who is not vaccinated, and they're very their immune system's very, you know, underdeveloped, so they need that protection from their mother. So it's important for pregnant women to consider that after birth. The reason it's after birth is because it is a live vaccine, so it's not something we do. It can be passed through the uterine wall, so we want to make sure that it's after birth and it gets passed through breast milk.
So ignore all of this white hair that I have on my head, and I'm really only 14 years old.
Oh,
can I come to Curry Community Health?
You
and
can
get a vaccination.
You can
at 14 for what?
For any vaccinations that you need. In this state, a 14-year-old can seek their own medical care.
Ah.
Okay, that's in Oregon.
Yes, in this state.
Because I read a story about a young man. I think he was in Portland or maybe he was in Washington. But at any rate, he turned 18.
Mm-hmm.
And he went and got vaccinated for...
But in this state, it's 14. So
in this state, it's 14.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
as an adult, Ben, the MMR only lasts... I mean, I was revaccinated, and I cannot remember at what age, but as an adult... Because of either the profession I was in or something, they said, you need to, for MMR, you need a booster. And Lily's shaking her head, so she knows what happened.
It's a nod.
I just think I was shocked that I needed
generally,
one.
Most people get two. So you'll get one and then a booster, and that gives you about 97% immunity for a lifetime. But for pregnant women, it is really important for them to get that. There are other situations where you're going to need to get
if you're working in the healthcare field,
is
that
usually important.
You usually get a third one? Was that?
Yes, you can get a booster. And that's, you know, much like she was talking about with rabies. You know, she works in a profession where she's exposed to bites. She needs that protection. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Ben, Lily, if you want to go, I have a quick question for Ben. So quick question for you, Ben. We're traveling and didn't even realize until now that, we're Machu Picchu for our honeymoon, going to hike. Oh, I need Hep A and typhoid, I believe they said.
Yeah.
So where can I go to get the travel vaccines?
You can come to Curry Community Health.
Awesome. I realized I couldn't travel without
We're actually the only ones who carry travel vaccines.
Okay.
Usually give us a call first because we do have to order them. We don't stock like yellow fever on hand. But we can get them.
Cool.
And they're available and just give us a call and we'll get those ordered.
I hadn't even thought about, I can't travel safely without my vaccines.
Yeah. Wow. In fact, we do give quite a few travelers vaccines. Awesome. It's a really great service to, you know, people are going to various parts of the world.
For a nominal fee.
It's great to have you protected and then not bring stuff back, you know?
Thank you, Ben.
And people traveling and bringing stuff back is like the number one way that things are spread in the U.S. I mean, there's all this
That's how this measles outbreak started.
But it always is people who've like traveled to the Philippines with like a raging like measles problem or, you know, to other places. Like Israel right now, I think is dealing with like a pretty significant problem in that. So that's interesting about travel being, travel vaccinations being really important.
For sure.
So going back to my being 14 years of old age, I don't have a driver's license. They took it away because I was doing 85 in a school zone. But, okay, so I'm 14. Do you have a sub office at the school something?
Yes, we have.
So if I'm 14, I can just go over there.
Just pop over at the school. So we have one in Brookings at the high school. And it's actually in between all three schools, between the high school, middle school, and elementary school. So it's just across the street from all of them.
So there's really no excuse for anybody 14 years or older.
And we also offer, if any organization wants to contact us, we can set up a immunization clinic at your place of work. We can bring our nurses to your place of work. If you want to do a flu clinic, or let's say we have workers who are exposed to Hep B, like first responders, we can come to your place of work and provide those vaccines.
I'm curious about animals, and Jesse, this question's for you. Do you see a increase in like the last 10 years? I know, I don't think you've been a veterinarian for 10 years, but you hear about what it used to be. Okay. Is there an increase in people not wanting to get their pets vaccinated for things that they used to just say, well, sure?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're still improving. And the reason why is because of our animal control, first and foremost, is continually always better, especially with cats, our spay and neuter program. So there's unlike with people, there's this wild population of animals that we think about. So despite, I would say, to your question, despite a recent trend in people not wanting to for the same reasons, largely just they don't want to expose their animals to that, we're still going in the right direction because our population control and vaccinations are good. And I'm glad you brought that up because I was just going to urge people in Crescent City. We had a couple more parvo puppies come in. Parvo should be gone by now. Really shouldn't be as big of an issue as it is. Gladly in Brookings, we have a really good vaccinated population. But if your puppy's 6 weeks or older and before they get to 8 weeks, get a vaccine in them, please. And then did I answer your question though? We, with our vaccinated animals, it's unfortunate though. There's, you know, if your cat has leukemia, it should be an indoor cat because your cat will give it by grooming even, or sharing a dish to other cats, and just had to, let another one go that was immune compromised and they had no idea had leukemia. They didn't think to vaccinate their outdoor cat for leukemia. And I think they just honestly didn't know. But
you can vaccinate for
leukemia in cats. You can, not for AIDS, unfortunately, but for leukemia you can. So
my grandmother had, they lived out in the country, and they just kind of, you know, animals were animals, and she had two little puppies that got parvo. Wow, that was sad. Yeah. That was really, it's.
Well, I hate to end on a sad note, but we are out of time, and I want to firstly thank Pi White for being our record technician over here. He always does a fabulous job, and I also want to thank Ben Cannon from Curry Community Health for coming to join us, Rose, Lily, and Jesse, and Teresa, and I'm Dan, and keep the cards and letters coming in.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program. The information provided is not intended to substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek the advice of your personal physician or other qualified healthcare professional before changing your healthcare treatment, diet, or lifestyle.